Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Yes, I've just gone 8:34 Central African Time, consciously connected, keeping you company. And alhamdulillah, from the councillor to the Member of Parliament, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam, we go to the segment called Parliamentary Tunes. Ahmed, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning, Ahmed?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, mashallah. Beautiful day in the city of Durban. I wish I could say that when you go around the streets of Durban from what it used to be to what it is like today, it's chalk and cheese, eh? That's really deteriorated over the years. But there's a whole lot that's happening. Well, former President Jacob Zuma says CR is corrupt and must be held for treason. Here we are. What a statement. JZ thinks CR is corrupt. It seems like the corrupt are calling the corrupt corrupt, but be that as it may. Very unfortunate, another teacher in the Free State was gunned down by a fellow pupil or student of the school. Another accident, a very serious accident again, this time on the town hill, which seems to be a common place for accidents. Now, there is growing pressure internationally for particularly from European nations, calling on them to get out of NATO. As a result of the atrocities that NATO is, committing worldwide. Yeah, these are just some of the things, but Thabo Mbeki made some revelations. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's shocking, eh, indeed. And when you're talking about campaigning, and he says, and he gave an example of a municipality where assassins are hired and they call them what is in Tabi, which means hitmen. And the municipality itself pays for these hitmen, and they have a list. And, their job is they get paid consistently all the time. And whenever there's a need to assassinate somebody, then they go out and carry these assassinations. So they're on the payroll of the municipality. Can you believe where we are going in this country? And, of course, the dark days are here for the U.S. dollar. More and more people are predicting it's the beginning. And, of course, my very dear friend hosted a show the other day as well, George Galloway, on the dollar. And, it's just a matter of time the dollar will be a thing of the past. And, of course, in the last 5 years, if there's anything that has increased in the country, and considerably at that, it's potholes. Potholes have now gone up, almost doubled in the last 5 years.
Well, Ahmed, I tell you, you talk about the U.S. dollar is dying. Do you agree with him? Yeah, this was the panel discussion that Al Mahirin, I think that's a platform that George Galloway appeared on. And clearly, George Galloway and Ahmed are very close friends. And George Galloway openly said it on international media, referring to Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam. I love this man. So, hey. Yeah, you can call him your best friend. The U.S. dollar is dying. I ran a survey this morning on Marcus Sahaba, the voice of the Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. I played the clip this morning also. There is 99% are agreeing that the U.S. dollar is dying. The 1% said, no, America is too powerful to be taken lightly. Ahmed, you still find that 1% still believing that, Uncle Sam is still the king. What's your thought, Ahmed?
Contrary to that, but some of the reports that are coming in is the poor state of the United States economy. In fact, they talk about the entities in the United States. They talk about the infrastructure, the state of the roads and the airports and other infrastructure, which is crumbling in the United States. It would appear that the United States is crumbling. And I think with the pressure and the added pressure that is being put by many other countries, and that is why the United States is putting out threats there now to the Saudis as well, because the Saudis because of the petrodollar, of course. And remember, China imports and exports with its own currency in any event, and many others are doing that. Many countries are buying oil through different currencies other than the U.S. dollar. And it's perhaps the route to go eventually. But what it clearly says is this, Brother Shepherd, that, and if you see some of the things that unfolded in the last 2 or 3 days, you'd find that the United States' survival, without any doubt, depends on what happens outside. And that's why they create this conducive environment outside for violence, protest, wars, disease. Well, there's some shocking revelations that are coming out even on COVID-19 now, and the United States involvement in this, and as early as March 2020, they talk about, and even of the Omicron virus. You're talking about ISIS, you're talking about NATO and Gaddafi, what they have done, and how the regime changes in different countries is all driven by the United States' greed for power. So the United States' survival depends entirely on the chaos and mayhem that you cause everywhere else. And now that they're finding themselves in a very difficult situation, and next let's go on to explain that should more and more countries decide to do away with the dollar, that is going to cause serious consequences for the United States economy and the country as a whole. And one of the things that the United States tries to boost the economy is when there's war and civil unrest anywhere else in the world because of their armaments and things. And you can expect them now, with, you know, and now they want to not only target the Saudi oil, but also the arms, because Saudi is but one of the largest arms country, companies and institutions in the world, which, if you know, that our president has gone to meet recently as well. But all in all, I think things are not looking good for the United States of America. And perhaps this might be the time, the opportune moment for countries, even the African continent. If you even listen to what Mugabe said, I think it was as early as 1975, I think, or a lot longer. He talks about NATO. He talks about how they went into what was the purpose of going to Libya and what their intentions eventually was and what they did there. And that's why many, many countries are also calling for the disbandment or to withdraw from NATO as well. Because remember, this is all U.S.-led. And the United States, you know, is the one that calls the shots. So, yeah, I think all in all, if this thing continues, you might be bringing the United States. But let us admit one thing, that if you want peace, you want security, you want stability all over the world, then you have to, it's no option, no alternative, but you have to bring the United States down to be an equal or an equivalent to any other nation, not the superpower status that they enjoy.
Yeah, the biggest joke is the veto power. Veto, veto, veto everywhere. Veto for Israel and veto for that one. And all these veto powers, America used it for unjust causes. And then, you know, over 180,000, 200,000 bridges in America, or maybe more than that, need repair. They're in the brink of, falling down. Then you find their roads. Are you talking about potholes? I believe there are a lot of potholes in America. They need to sort that out. And another thing is that you find a lot of homeless people in America. Then you find also the cities of America are deteriorating, are becoming ghost towns. The society of America, they have the largest amount of alcoholics, the biggest population of drugs and all these other, you know, promiscuity is all rife. So America, Ahmed, America is imploding from within. They don't need an invasion. They already created their own self-destruction mode. Your thoughts, Ahmed?
Yes, indeed. They are in a debt crisis in any event as a result. But look at the state of the economy, and like you said, the bridges, the infrastructure in general. But look at the amount of money that they allocate for wars and things. I mean, you know, and wanting to get into other countries. But they go there all with a hidden agenda. And I said this many years ago when the U.S. ambassador one day said to me to South Africa, you know, we gave you 1 billion rand for HIV and AIDS. Yeah, what he forgot is that if they gave you 1 billion, they'll take 10 billion back. You know, but be that as it may, I think that the United States, if they, if the other countries can continue in the momentum of marginalizing the dollar and things like that, and it's going to go a long way in bringing them down to size. And already you can see the state of the economy. Look at their debt that they have and how that debt is going to increase. You know, particularly if many other countries stop using the U.S. dollar and things like that. And let me tell you, the United States really doesn't have much. Even though it doesn't have much, it has everything. Because other countries and other states all over the world who have what, have everything, is, you know, put it under the control of the United States. So I think this is good news for the world. And if you look at the United States dominance and the political agenda on military, on you know, disease control and everything, you know, they manipulate anything and everything. And it's important, I think, that others come together. So I think they're moving in the right direction. They need the buy-in from the Asian continent. Some of them are already part of it. They need the African continent to be part and parcel of it. You know, and if you can do those things, then it will be, you know, it makes it a lot easier. Because otherwise, you know what the United States of America will do. You know, they come up with the sanctions and threats and, you know, things of that nature. Fortunately, that, you know, they are a nuclear force. But fortunately, there are those like the Russians and others and Iran and things like that who also have no nuclear weapons. And are willing to take them on. Remember, there was one stage, if the United States rises, everybody will sit down. But I think the time has come now where you can see they are standing up to the United States, which is very good for international politics and for safety, security, stability all over the world. That's the route to go.
Yeah, I mean, a very important point you make. I mean, look at the armament industry. I mean, look at the American budget. Trillions and trillions of dollars goes into warfare and machinery. These trillions and trillions of dollars goes to creating war, mayhem, murder, and perpetrating genocide throughout the world. It's American regime that supports, you know, the genocide in Yemen. Also, you know, allowing Israel to get away with impunity in Palestine and so forth. All over the world, there is some American influence coming through with this warfare and the weapons of mass destruction that they have. And the point made is, imagine those trillions of dollars was invested in the upkeep of humanity, in food production, in alleviating poverty. But they wouldn't listen to that. What type of conscience do these people have, or do they really have conscience? And what type of world are we living in? This is more like living in the world of a world of shaitania. I mean, the empathy, the sympathy, the, you know, the celebrating and embracing the favors of divine on us is a thing that is forgotten by most of these, you know, types of people that run this world or that are given a position of power. And we know that Hizbu Shaitan have come to the fore. Your thoughts on that, Ahmed?
Well, first of all, I think your question on what conscience, the answer is simple, no conscience whatsoever. Secondly, I think you ought to know by now that your radio station is being monitored. You can see you touch a nerve and suddenly you are cut off. So, yeah, intelligence is working. Remember, the ANC has not been spared by the U.S. intelligence together with our state security. So, yeah, you need to be very careful. But I think what is important to note is, you know, Brother Shepherd, you know, we talk about the amount of money that they spend in with arms and things like that. Remember, at this stage, they don't have a choice. If they don't do that, there's no way they're going to protect their interest all over the world. And the only reason they do that, they cause the mayhem and the chaos to be able to have control over the entire globe. And that's the price that they have to pay. But it's a price that they are paying at the expense of its own people. Rather than spending that money on infrastructure and improving the quality of life of their people, they have to, they don't have a choice. It's not like many other countries who can make a choice and say, no, I'm not going to spend any money on arms this year. The United States can't afford to do that. The moment they let loose and don't do that, they are gone. They are history, because their survival depends on arms and ammunition. You know, they have always, through their arms, through their military itself, put a lot of pressure on people and states all over the world, that if you don't toe the line with the United States of America, of course, you're going to become a victim of regime change and things. And those that did not toe the line with the United States paid the ultimate price. However, now that there are many others that are standing up to the United States and things, the ball game is now changing. And you would notice that the United States is willing to sit down with Russia and talk with them suddenly when they realize that Russia is no pushover suddenly, you know. So I think they are to some extent coming down to size. The fear is this, that, you know, the fear of losing and coming down to size, how are they going to react? Now, we know that the United States, particularly its allies, are merciless. They will be willing to even lose their own peoples, you know, and things like that, if it's necessary, just for survival. But the truth is that survival for the United States depends on the amount of money they spend in the military and things like that. So that's the problem we are facing. And it's not going to be an easy one for them to come out of in any event, because then they can lose that control and power overnight. Right now they're losing the grip, but they're losing it over a period of time. They can be a drop overnight, so they understand that. And that's why they don't have a choice. But the difficulty for them is when you're going to have limited revenue coming or decreasing revenue, but you still have to keep up your expenditure, that's when they're going to run into serious trouble.
Yeah, you're talking about serious troubles. And, you know, I know Farooq Bhai is listening to us. Farooq Bhai, you know who they are, FB. Farooq Bhai, you're most welcome. But we want to know about, Joe Biden came in. He's doing the same bidding like how Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, they do the same thing. Loving war everywhere. You know, Barack Obama was the biggest warmonger ever. His drone attacks, Ma'azallah, is legendary for what he has done, dropping all these bombs in Muslim lands. But the point is, Donald Trump, it seems like they want to put Donald Trump out of the equation. He has to talk about, or he has to answer for what happened at Capitol Hill. It seems as if they want to get him out of the equation. And some have said, even if there is an election, they will make sure that Donald Trump does not win. What's your thoughts on that, Ahmed?
Exactly what's happening in Pakistan. They're doing everything to keep our brother Imran Khan out. Everything they're trying to. Now the court has ruled against him as well. But, I hope sanity prevails at some stage. But on the day, coming back to the issue of United States, yes. But remember, brother, you have to deep. No matter who becomes the president of the United States, does not change the direction that they go in, because the policies and things, and remember these United States and the influence, particularly the Zionists and things that have in the United States, so that is not going to change. So regime change in the United States, you know, unless it comes, from the Afro-Americans, unless you get that, it's not going to really change there. The policies and things, and in any case, no matter who that comes into the United States government at the point in time, and if they do not follow in the footsteps of their former leaders and follow the policies of the United States, they'll be targeted, they'll be assassinated, they'll be removed. So remember, it is their policies that are a problem. It's not necessarily the people in the United States of America. But I think what you need is the Americans need to start rising against their own people, something that you don't find often. And I'm glad that many European countries now, and you can look at the numbers that are rising against NATO. And if you start having something like that in the United States of America, where people will rise against the government's involvement, incitement of violence, creating terrorist groups and things like that, military interventions, regime changes in countries. If you have that, if the American people rise and say enough is enough, we're not going to have this anymore, it will perhaps, accelerate the process of a better globe, a better world.
Yeah, it is the American Bible thumpers. They raise the dust all over Africa and they go all over the world. And the Bible thumpers themselves, the American ones I'm talking about, they tell you, it is a God-given burden for us to do this. And then you find them, with the American army, you find these Bible thumpers will have the American army with them. There are certain bombs that they dropped in Iraq. And they wrote on the bombs, you know what they wrote? With the love from Jesus. I mean, our Mazabar is shocking indeed. This is how they are preaching religion. What type of religion are you preaching? And the point made here, Ahmad, is when you look at China, have you heard of China going and destabilizing countries, bombing countries, annexing countries? We never heard of anything. I don't think the Chinese ever went and invaded any country. Did they ever do that? Everything that they do, the sit-back policy, they sit back and they do it very gently. Am I right in my observation, Ahmad?
Well, remember that many of you have been indoctrinated and remember that colonization, religion was what was used to colonize people. And they've created this divide, between the Christian and the Ummah, the Muslims themselves. And that is what politicians thrive on. And that's basically what they have been doing for a period of time. And now that you can see that people are beginning to see through this, okay, and they find that that is not good enough what they have done, so now they come up with a whole lot of other stuff, like you get LGBTIQ communities, you get a whole lot to cause more confusion and conflict amongst religious groups and things of that nature. So that is something that they have used for initially. And if you look at even South Africa, and that is why you could say South Africa is a Christian country or run on Christian principles, whether they actually apply that, if they apply that, it would be a different South Africa as well, but certainly they won't. But it was used, for that purpose. So even those that were indoctrinated, even those army personnel, military, the soldiers, these people were indoctrinated into believing that they are fighting a religious war when they do these things. So that's what I think has been the norm. You remember the British did exactly the same thing. And there were two things that they used. One was color of the skin, and the other one was, of course, religion. But, as more and more people are rising in opposition to those, they're finding it very difficult, and that's why they introduce new kinds of division amongst the people.
Absolutely. As you get, when the colonizers came, the people had the land, and the colonizers had the Bible, and then they had the bottle on the other hand, too. So what happened? They gave the people, they gave them the bottle, and they gave them the Bible. And today, who has the land? Yeah, that is a story of, in the short, long and short of it. Well, Ahmad, I know you and I, when we are going to school, we started off, going to school, under the tree. We had two classes, morning classes and afternoon classes. And the morning classes were under the tree and, we could see the Harvard planes flying and so forth. But believe it or not, in this new democracy, some learners are still being taught under trees in Gauteng and in the Tubalele school, high school in White City, Soweto. Learners are crammed into temporary classrooms and some are being taught under a tree. Tubalele was started as a missionary school in 1950 and according to its website, was upgraded in full high school in 2015. But Ahmed, they're still reading and learning under the trees. maybe they're very lucky they can see the birds and bees. Your thoughts, Ahmad?
But we created 17,500 millionaires and multi-millionaires in the country in the last couple of years. And more billionaires in the country, am I correct? And yet you get the Minister of Energy, Gweri Mantashe, telling you how many people they gave electricity to in 1995 to how many they're giving now. You know, but, you know, and the Minister, of course, Angie Mosheko continuously says that she will be, you know, doing away with the mud schools. They'll be doing away with pit toilets. But what is really happening? Very little or nothing. It's actually a disgrace. A country like South Africa with the resources that we have, you know, and where we're going to. But actually, you know, even if you talk about the weather conditions that you have today to the weather conditions that you had, you know, many, many years ago. Many years ago, people could have even survived, you know, under the tree and elsewhere. Can you do that today with the weather conditions? No, you can't. So, you know, the question that arises is, when are we going to do something about it? When are we going to change direction? And accepting that, yes, for 28 years, whatever decisions we've taken has not actually worked for the benefit of the people in this country. But in order to do that, you have to admit the mistakes you've made and find solutions. Are you willing to admit the mistakes you've made? You're not willing to. So if the government does not want to admit the mistakes, then go back to the drawing board and correct those things and change direction, then you're not, because one of the things that the root causes of where we are is the amount of money that is being embezzled or looted through corruption and not getting value for money. I mean, I can tell you hundreds of billions of rands already you'll be saving. Now, the question is, despite raising this thing again and again and again, why? Even though the president admitted this in the Zondo Commission, that they received money through unlawful means and kept it because they needed it. So we know the problem where it is. And you've read and heard what happened in the last week or 2 weeks in all the IFP-run municipalities, or particularly in KZN and others in the Western Cape, Kannaland, and many others, of course, all over. But the important thing to notice is that we know there's a problem there. We know that we can save that money. We know there are needs in the country. We can take that money and go better spend it and provide better services. We know the infrastructure is throughout the country is crumbling. We know that, whether it's water, sanitation, roads, energy, we know these things. But there's the money there. But you're not willing to protect that money and divert it to delivering services. Why? Because you're benefiting from it, because your survival depends on that thing. So if we continue that way, it means there's no hope. Unless you decide to change direction and do the right thing, it means that people will continuously, even the schools that you've got, will deteriorate. The Department of Public Works has always been, as far as I know, like in an intensive care unit. Always. They just have absolutely no direction.
Yeah, absolutely, Ahmad. I want you to listen to this and comment on it. President Cyril Ramaphosa has been urged to show one of his ministers that door, or at the very least, encounter her to resign. According to DA, Kombuzozo Nichaveni, good chummy of yours, has been guilty of non-performance while in charge of the communications and digital technologies portfolio. Kombuzozo Nichaveni, identified as a non-performer by the DA in what many critics would argue is a crowded field. Nichaveni has been identified as dead wood within the ANC cabinet, and Diana Koller Bernard is the shadow minister for communications, and she believes Ramaphosa now has a duty to deal with the head of department. And many also are saying people like Fikile Imbalula and also Becky Ele should hit the door. Ahmad, how do you react?
Well, there is no doubt that there is underperforming ministries under the current president. And, of course, I'm not expecting him to make any changes, because, remember, he can't afford to make any changes right now, because if he removes people, it weakens his chances of becoming president for the second term. So, at the moment, it's got nothing to do with whether you're performing or not performing, whether you can perform or you can't perform, whether you've got the ability to perform or not. That's not the case. He has to protect his interest, and his interest is winning that conference, so he cannot afford to take that risk and remove anybody at this stage. That's the first thing. The second thing is, remember that sometimes it's not the right thing to attack the ministers. Ministers come and go, and she hasn't been there for a long period of time in any event. But the DGs, the DDGs and things are there for many, many years. They're giving direction. Some of these ministers, before they even settle in, well, it's time for them to move. So to some extent, yes, you can't. But whether they have the ability to go in there from day one and be able to bring about changes. But let us also not forget that the changes that they bring in their departments depends on cabinet approval. So any changes they want to make must go to the cabinet. It must be approved there before they can do them. So all the other ministers and things are part of that decision making. So sometimes I wouldn't agree when we say we need to target this one and that one, because I think we need to be mindful of the way the system works.
And as you say, the system works in a certain way, where your license machine is broken once again, where your mortuaries are on strike, where your reservoirs can't get water, although your dams are full, the water can't get into the reservoirs because of load shedding, and then you find criminality around you, you find kidnapping. Now, believe it or not, the other day, Ahmed and I were talking, they kidnapping everyone. Why don't they kidnap Chinese? They kidnapped a Chinese the other day. Well, it's all happening in this country, Ahmed. Watch this space. Watch this space, MP, Member of Parliament. Ahmed, you were absolutely brilliant as usual. Perhaps your parting words this morning.
Well, yes, I think, you know, it's not just South Africa, the rest of the world. Many, many countries are going through a very, very difficult time at the moment. But let us not forget, because of politics, the world is where it is today. If you're talking about the war, it's politicians that created the war, and that's why you are here. So, but at the same time, whilst I say that we are going through the same things or similar things all over the world, let us not forget that we must hold the authorities wherever we live accountable. We must hold government accountable. Now, you cannot be sitting back with poor delivery of services in whichever local municipality that you are in and expect it to get better. You have to get together, unite and rise and hold your local municipalities, particularly for basic services, so that they are accountable and they deliver. And if they're not willing to deliver, my suggestion is come together, hold back their rates and things like that and tell them no. They must, because I can tell you, and maybe we must get our legal experts to come in, whether people will have the right to hold back their rates and things, given the fact that you are not accountable, you are not providing the services for which people are paying. And unless you're going to do that, it's going to continue to deteriorate. I mean, an ideal example is look at what the state of Durban was and what the state of it is today. And you didn't need to be rocket scientists to know that you needed to maintain these things. You have been providing budgets for it for a period of time. But you've done nothing. You've eaten that money rather than ensuring that you had quality services provided and protected that infrastructure. You didn't do that. So, you know, governments are, to a very large extent, from local, are taking our people for granted because we continuously go out there and vote for people, even though they're not fit for purpose. So we must take responsibility for where we are. Let us stand together, rise, and go and hold these municipalities accountable. If they are not going to provide the services, I want to tell you, stop paying your stuff. Come together and say, we are not willing to pay unless you can give us time frames that this is what you're going to do to improve the services that you provide to us, because that's what we pay you for. We're not just paying you for taking our monies and doing what you feel like doing.
Absolutely brilliant, Ahmed. You have a, mashallah, beautiful day ahead. We will talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.